A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been engraving. He bought a Dremel 7760 a few months ago, expecting the main obstacle to be his asthma. Respirator, vacuuming, the whole dust management routine. Turns out that part's manageable. The real puzzle, he says, is the bits. He's got a 2.7mm carbide for fine work, but for PCB part numbers, even that feels like writing with a crayon. And when he switches to fine carbides for 1 or 2mm numbers on HDPE, the result is chicken scroll, multiple thin lines that look hand-drawn and messy. So he's asking four things. 1. What are the actual limits of human precision for readable microengraving on PCBs? 2. How do you select the right mixture of carbides for very fine work versus larger markings? And why do the fine ones fail so badly at 1 to 2mm? 3. What tools exist for cleaning the fur out of engraved channels in HDPE and ABS beyond a spudger and coarse sandpaper? And 4. For high-volume work, is there a quick-change system for Dremel engraving bits? Something like the interchangeable heads or magnetic chucks you get with drills? Or do people just get fast at swapping collets?
The answer to most of those questions sits inside a single counterintuitive fact about how plastic wants to be cut. And it's not the fact most people reach for. So let's start by defining what we're actually talking about when we say microengraving here, because the term covers a range that spans about four orders of magnitude.
From I can read it to nobody can read it without a microscope and a prescription.
Right. At one end, you've got Graham Short. We'll get to him. Engraving letters the size of a red blood cell. That's not what Daniel's doing. For this episode, microengraving means the practical hobbyist zone, 0.5 to 2 millimeter text on PCBs and plastics, with a handheld rotary tool. The Dremel 7760 he bought is a capable machine, 8,000 to 25,000 RPM, 4-volt lithium ion, about $50. But its finest standard engraving bit, the 9924, has a 0.8 millimeter tip. That's already too coarse for PCB part numbers. So the moment you want to go finer, you're out of Dremel's catalog and into third-party suppliers. Precise bits, Vortex carbide, and suddenly you're making geometry choices with no guidance.
And the geometry is the whole game. That's where we're going. First, the limits of what a hand can do. Then the bit paradox. Then the fur problem and its surprising fix. Then the workflow tools, and finally the state of quick change systems, which, spoiler, isn't what anyone hopes it is.
The first question Daniel raised is the most fundamental. What can a human hand actually do at this scale? And there are two answers, the extreme outer limit and the practical hobbyist ceiling. The extreme limit is a man named Graham Short. In 2011, he completed a piece called Nothing is Impossible on the edge of a razor blade. The letters were 0.1 millimeters. Invisible to the naked eye, you need 400x magnification to read them, and that's not even his smallest work.
His smallest is 6 microns, 0.006 millimeters. That's the size of a red blood cell. A human hair is about 100 microns, so we're talking about lettering 16 times thinner than a hair.
The process to get there is, honestly, closer to a medical procedure than a craft. He works only at night, midnight to 5 a.m., three nights a week, to avoid traffic vibrations. He takes beta blockers to drop his heart rate to around 20 beats per minute. He uses Botox to suppress blinking and facial twitches. He loops a leather strap around his elbow and anchors it to a heavy press to lock his arm rigid. In a five-hour session, he completes 7 or 8 cuts. 7 or 8.
So the answer to what can a human do is 6 microns if you're willing to chemically suppress your own pulse and word between heartbeats. That's not a word flow. That's performance art with a carbide tip.
And Graham Shore himself says he's at the limit. He told Sky News, I can't do any more now, I'm at the limit. He also said something revealing about mistakes. He expects them. It's part of the work. At that scale, the slip is built into the process. He just factors it in.
Which brings us to the practical ceiling. James Stanley, he's the one who built the Dragon Graver we'll talk about later, did a series of tests engraving text on aluminum at different sizes. His results are the best benchmark I've found for what a skilled hobbyist can expect. At 1 millimeter, the text is legible. At 2.5, you're squinting. At 2.4 to 0.3, it's legible only if you already know what it says. Your brain fills in the gaps. At 0.2 millimeters, it's illegible even if you know the text.
And that's on aluminum, which cuts cleaner than plastic. For PCBs, it's even harder. The surface is never truly flat, so cut depth varies across the board. And here's the thing most people don't realize about tiny V-bits. They're rarely concentric. The tip spins in a small circle, runout, so the slot you get is much wider than the nominal tip size. You think you're cutting a 0.1 millimeter line, but the tool is actually routing something closer to 0.4.
So the tool lies to you. The number on the package is the tip diameter under ideal conditions, not the width of the cut it actually makes when it's spinning at 20,000 RPM in a handheld tool.
Stanley's proposed solution for PCB work is interesting. He suggests using a Dragon Graver. Spindle off. Spring-loaded diamond tip that just scratches. No rotation means no runout, and the spring means it self-levels on uneven surfaces. It's elegant. But it's also an open experiment. Nobody has published results showing it works at production scale. He proposed it, but as far as I can tell, he hasn't tested it systematically.
So the practical limit for a hobbyist with a Dremel and steady hands is somewhere around 0.5 millimeters for I can read this, and 1 millimeter for this looks clean. Below that, you're fighting physics, runout, surface flatness, the tremor in your own fingers, and no amount of beta blockers is going to turn a Dremel into a medical microscope.
Now, the bit geometry paradox. This is the core technical insight, and it's what Daniel's running into with his 1 to 2 millimeter numbers. He's got a fine carbide, say a 0.1 millimeter tip, V-bit from Vortex Carbide, 20 degree angle, 3.175 millimeter shank, fits the Dremel light perfectly. Beautiful tool. But when he tries to write a 2 millimeter number with it, the result looks terrible.
Chicken scrawl.
And the reason is straightforward once you think about it. A very fine V-bit cuts a single thin line. To make a visible number at 2 millimeters, the stroke width of each digit needs to be maybe 0.3 or 0.4 millimeters wide. The fine bit's line is much narrower than that. So you have to trace the outline of each digit or make multiple passes side by side. And because you're doing this by hand, those passes don't line up perfectly. You get an irregular, hand-drawn look. Exactly the chicken scrawl Daniel's describing.
So the bit that's perfect for 0.5 millimeter text is exactly wrong for 2 millimeter text. And the fix isn't get better at tracing. It's use a different bit.
A wider bit, a ball nose, or a larger V-bit cuts the full stroke width in a single pass. One pass, one clean line. The number looks machine-made. This means the ideal engraving kit needs bits at both extremes. Sub 1 2 millimeter for micro work, think precise bits, they do a 0.05 inch tip, that's 0.13 millimeters, and they go down to 0.03 inches, which is 0.076 millimeters, both with 1 1/8 inch shanks, fully compatible with the 7.6 TerriSex. And then at the other end, 1 to 2 millimeter ball, nose, or V bits for readable numbers. Nothing in the middle does both jobs well.
The bit that tries to split the difference gives you mediocre micro work and mediocre large work. It's the engraving equivalent of an all-season tire, fine in no conditions.
And these third-party bits are serious tools. Precise bits are 100% optically inspected, sub-micrograin tungsten carbide, hardness HRA 9.2. They're not the little diamond-coated grinding bits that come in a 20-pack for $8. Those have their place, but not for this.
So, if the bit geometry paradox means you need bits at both extremes, the next question is how to actually use them on plastic without making a mess. Daniel mentioned HDPE and ABS, and the fur that comes up unpredictably from the surface. He has discovered the spudger as a cleaning tool, which is creative. But the fur problem starts before you ever pick up a cleaning tool.
The fur is caused by heat, specifically heat from multi-flute bits. Most beginners assume more flutes means a smoother cut, more cutting edges, cleaner finish. For HDPE, the opposite is true. There's a post on the Easel forum from 2015 that nails this. A user named Bill Arnold was cutting HDPE with a 2-flute spiral bit, 1/32-inch, and getting, his words, tons of fuzzies that a brush couldn't remove. He tried different feed rates, different spindle speeds, nothing worked. The fix was a single flute bit.
Why does that work?
A multi-flute bit on plastic generates friction. The extra cutting edges don't clear chips fast enough, so the tool rubs instead of shearing. The plastic partially melts, and that melted plastic re-solidifies as fur along the edges of the cut. A single flute bit, often called an O-flute or a downcut bit, has one big chip channel. It shears the plastic cleanly, the chip evacuates immediately, and the heat leaves with the chip.
So the rule is, make chips, don't rub. If you see dust or fuzz or smears, you're generating friction, not cutting.
That's rule number one from the Interstate Plastics HDPE Fabrication Guide, almost verbatim. Rule 2, get the chip out of the cut immediately. Air blasts, vacuums, whatever you've got. Rule 3, use sharp carbide bits with proper chip load. And this is why the Dremel's low speed setting, 8,000 RPM, and shallow passes help. High RPM with a fine bit on plastic is a recipe for melting.
Jim Bosler's put out a guide in June of this year, 2026, that adds a few practical tricks. Painter's tape on the surface before engraving reduces burrs. Lower speed setting. Shallow passes. Clear debris frequently with a soft brush or compressed air. For ABS specifically, the insight is that melting isn't caused by high speeds per se. It's caused by rubbing. If your feed rate is too slow or the tool is dull, the cutter rubs. The fix is higher feed rates, so heat gets carried away in the chip.
Which feels wrong when you're doing delicate work. Your instinct is to go slow, but going too slow is exactly what melts the plastic.
So you've got your single flute bit, you've got your low RPM, you've got your tape, and you still get some fur. Now what? Daniel mentioned a spudger, and he's right that it works. But there are tools actually designed for this.
Hand-deburring tools are the professional answer. The Klima NB111 ERT is a good example. Ergonomic handle, 360-degree rotating high-speed steel blade, designed specifically for plastics, copper, aluminum. It gets into engraved channels and slices off burrs cleanly. Starvost makes a similar tool with 15 interchangeable blades. Slice UK has deburring tools built for the finishing stages of plastic manufacturing. They're designed to remove rollover burrs, tear burrs, and cut off burrs from injection, molded or machined parts.
For rotary work, Exibac makes ceramic fiber deburring stones that go in a micro-motor system. They get into hard-to-reach edges and internal features. But for the hobbyist with a Dremel, the community-tested approach for HDPE fuzz includes a few things Daniel might already have. A stiff nylon brush, a razor blade for manual cleanup, and, this one surprised me, a light pass with a torch.
That comes from a user named Michael Hirsch on the Easel Forum 2017. A quick pass with a flame burns off the fuzzies. It's essentially flame polishing. You're applying an oxygen-rich flame briefly to melt the outer layer, which smooths micro-ridges and removes frosted edges. You have to work fast to avoid oxidation and discoloration, but it works.
A torch. For cleaning up plastic. The same tool you'd use for creme brulee.
It connects to something important. Flame polishing is a known technique in HDPE fabrication. It's not a hack, it's a standard process, just usually done at larger scale. The hobbyist version is a small butane torch in quick hands.
Daniel also asked about workflow. Specifically, whether there's a quick change system for Dremel engraving bits. The kind of thing where you pop one head off and snap another on, like the magnetic chucks on drills. And the answer is no. Flat no. There's no magnetic chuck, no interchangeable head system, no keyless chuck equivalent for Dremel engraving accessories.
The Dremel 7760 has the EZ twist nose cap. You press the shaft lock button, twist the nose cap to loosen the collet, swap the bit, tighten. That's it. It's tool free, which is better than the old wrench system, but it's still a collet change. The EZ speed click system, the one that's 6 times faster, is for cutting wheels and sanding discs only, not engraving bits. The shanks don't fit.
The answer to do people just get fast at changing bits is yes. That's exactly what they do. The EZ twist is a single motion once you've got the muscle memory. Press, twist, swap, twist. Experienced users do it in seconds. It's not elegant, but it's the system we've got.
The one innovation worth mentioning is the Precise Bits depth ring system for CNC users. You can order their micro-engraving bits with depth rings positioned to plus or minus 0.4 inches, so you don't have to reset Z-axis 0 between tool changes. That's clever for CNC work, but it doesn't help with a handheld Dremel. For Daniel's use case, the workflow is get fast at the easy twist and design your engravings to minimize bit changes.
Which is actually a design problem, not a tool problem. If you plan your engravings so all the fine work happens with one bit and all the large work happens with another, you're changing bits once per piece instead of three times.
That's where the single bit philosophy comes in.
You're all talking about bits and collets and deburring tools, but the real secret is the old guy never changed his bit.
Wait.
I worked a summer at a shop that made custom nameplates for industrial equipment. Do not operate without guards and 2mm letters on HDPE panels, hundreds of them a week. The owner was this old German machinist, and he had one bit. A 1.2mm single flute carbide. He did everything with it.
Everything?
Micro engraving. He'd tell you to buy a laser. He said the Dremel was for marking, not art. But for nameplates, one bit. The small text got one pass. The large text got two passes side by side. And because he'd been doing it for 20 years, the two passes looked like one stroke. Machine made. No chicken scratch, because he wasn't tracing. He was filling. Two parallel lines from a single flute bit, and they met perfectly.
The chicken scrawl problem might be a workflow problem, not a bit selection problem. If you commit to one bit size and design your markings around it, you eliminate the quick change bottleneck entirely.
He also used a torch for cleanup. I thought he was insane the first time I saw him do it. One quick pass over a fresh nameplate, all the fuzzies gone, surface polished clear, no ink needed because the flame left it glossy. But he had a respirator that looked like it belonged in the clean room, and he'd vacuum the whole bench before starting. Every time. So the asthma thing? He'd have told your friend to get a better vacuum. And a downdraft table if he could afford one.
A downdraft table for a Dremel engraving station. That's actually not a bad idea.
The shop had one he built himself. Plywood box, furnace filter, old fan from a scrapped air handler. Pulled the dust straight down through the work surface. Cost him maybe $40 in 1979.
Hold it, 1979?
I was 17. The bit he used cost $12, and he sharpened it himself on a diamond stone. He said the secret to HDPE wasn't the tool, it was never letting the plastic get warm. If the panel felt warm to the touch, you were already doing it wrong.
The single bit philosophy, one 1.2mm single flute carbide, everything designed around that dimension, torch for finish, and obsessive dust control. That's a complete system.
He retired in 03 and sold the business to a guy who bought a laser engraver and went bankrupt in 18 months. The laser made pretty pictures, but the nameplates looked cheap, no depth. You could feel the difference with your fingers.
That tactile quality matters for industrial nameplates. A laser etch sits on the surface, it's a color change essentially. An engraved mark has topography. It survives abrasion, solvents, decades of people touching it.
The old guy's nameplates are still on machines all over the Midwest. I saw one 2 years ago in a factory in Ohio. Emergency. Stop, do not, bypass. Still legible. 40-some years.
40 years on a single flute cut.
The plastic yellows, but the letters don't go anywhere.
Where does that leave us? The drag engraver for PCB isolation routing is still an open question. Nobody's tested it at production scale, and it might be the missing tool for micro-engraving on uneven surfaces. And the single-bit philosophy raises its own question. Does it scale to high-volume work, or does it just shift the bottleneck from bit changes to pass planning? If you're doing two passes for every large character, that's double the machine time.
But zero tool change time. The math depends on the job. For a hobbyist doing small batches, the single bit approach probably wins. For production, you'd want to run the numbers.
The bigger point is that the gap between possible and practical is enormous. Graham Short at 6 microns on one end, a clean 2mm number on HDPE on the other. But the hobbyist with a Dremel and a respirator is closer to the practical limit than they think. The answers are mostly about geometry and heat management, not steady hands. Single flute bits for plastic, bits at both extremes of the size range, a torch and a vacuum, and the willingness to treat bit selection as a design decision, not a shopping problem.
If you've got a micro-engraving tip you swear by, or a technique for taming HDPE fur that we missed, send it in. We might do a follow-up.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping this show running, and apparently for knowing more about single flute carbides than I do.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.